Well, a few years back when I watched the movie Avengers Endgame in the theater, I left when the end credits started, even though I knew that if I could wait 5 more minutes, I'd be able to hear some sort of a sound that was supposedly connected to future coming Avengers movies or Marvel movies. But to me, hearing that sound didn't really seem worth sitting through the credits, and so I left. For some of you here today, the text we're looking at the very end, 1 Corinthians chapter 16, might feel a little bit like movie credits. Okay, Paul's already done with the main part of the letter. Now he's just describing some travel plans and saying hi to some people. It's really not worth it to sit through this. This part doesn't matter. And that would be a mistake. Because these verses describing some travel plans actually give us insight into some healthy presuppositions that guided Paul's ministry decisions. And we're going to look at those this morning. Now, I realize some of you might be here thinking, wait, what? Why are we in 1 Corinthians? Aren't we going through Matthew right now? Well, that's a good question. We're actually sharing from 1 Corinthians this morning to help us get ready for our week of prayer and fasting that's going to be coming up in January. We have some exciting ministry opportunities that are potentially emerging, and we want to begin inviting you into the process of thinking ahead and seeking God's will with us. And today's going to help because it's going to enable all of us to be kind of looking at the church through the eyes of a ministry leader. And this will help us as we pray and seek the Lord's will together. So look with me at 1 Corinthians chapter 16. And we're going to be looking today at verses 5 through 12. And so towards the end of the letter, Paul says this to the church at Corinth. I will visit you after passing through Macedonia, for I intend to pass through Macedonia. And perhaps I will stay with you or even spend the winter so that you may help me on my journey wherever I go. For I do not want to see you now just in passing. I hope to spend some time with you, if the Lord permits. But I will stay in Ephesus until Pentecost, for a wide door for effective work has opened to me, and there are many adversaries. When Timothy comes, see that you put him at ease among you, for he's doing the work of the Lord as I am. So let no one despise him. Help him on his way in peace that he may return to me, for I am expecting him with the brothers. Now, concerning our brother Apollos, I strongly urged him to visit you with the other brothers, but it was not at all his will to come now. He will come when he has opportunity. Before we jump into this text and I answer the question, why in the world are we looking at this morning? Let's go to the Lord in prayer. So, Father God, we come. We come to you. Lord, I come just knowing I need wisdom. And as a church, we need wisdom. I come excited for some of the things that you're stirring in our heart and some of the opportunities that might be there for us. And then ultimately, I'm really excited to look into your word today. Lord, you decided that this was important, an important thing to put in the Bible that you wrote. And so, Lord, open our minds and our hearts today to this passage. Help us to understand why is it there and how is it good for us. I pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, there's a humorous scene in the musical Fiddler on the Roof where Lazar, who's the meat butcher, and Tevye, who's the milkman, they approach a conversation and they've got two completely different presuppositions going into this conversation. So the milkman presupposes Lazar wants to buy my milk cow and I'm not selling. And the butcher presupposes Tevye knows that I am asking to marry his daughter. So Lazar starts off the conversation. He's like, Tevye, I suppose you know why I wanted to see you. And Tevye's like, oh, yes, I do, but there is no use talking about it. And Lazar's like, Tevye, I understand how you feel, but after all, you have a few more without her. And Tevye's like, oh, I see. Today you want one, and tomorrow you may want two. And Lazar's like, two? But what would I do with two? The same as you do with one. And Lazar's like, Tevye, this is very important to me. It's like, why? Why is it so important to you? Lazarus says, because I am lonely. And Tim's like, lonely? What are you talking about? How can a little cow keep you company? Little cow? Is that what you call her? Tevye's like, what else should I call her? That's what she is. Lazar, what are you talking about? Lazar said, don't you know? It's like, of course I know. We are talking about my new milk cow, the one you want to buy from me. And Lazar's like, a cow? A milk cow, so I won't be lonely. It's like, Tevye, I'm talking to you about your daughter. And then all of a sudden, the conversation started to get somewhere. Failing to understand the presuppositions behind someone's words or someone's actions can make it more challenging to work together. And the Apostle Paul knew this. So as he was communicating his ministry plans, as he was communicating his ministry thoughts, he's also communicating the presuppositions behind them. And healthy ministry presuppositions help the church. And this morning, I just want you to kind of understand a little bit how leaders are supposed to be thinking. Healthy, and if we share some of the same presuppositions, that's just going to help our unity, and it's going to help us as we move forward. And so the main takeaway this morning, healthy ministry presuppositions help the church, and it prompts the questions, well, what healthy ministry presuppositions? The Bible's full of them, but this particular passage has three that I would like to direct your attention to. And if we make these presuppositions our default, it's going to help us as a church. And so the three ministry presuppositions we're going to look at this morning is first, ministry decisions are multifaceted. Second, ministry partners matter. And third, ministry plans are often fluid. So let's look at these one at a time. First, ministry decisions are multifaceted. And as we look at these verses, we see that Paul is weighing several facets that are simultaneously important, but sometimes don't play easily next to each other. So we're going to see the facet A is like, I need help from you. Facet B is I desire time with you. And then facet C is I have obligations apart from you. And so he's trying to navigate all three of these simultaneously. So the facet A, I need help from you. We see this in verses 5 and 6. He says, I will visit you after passing through Macedonia, for I intend to pass through Macedonia, and perhaps I will stay with you or even spend the winter so that you may help me on my journey wherever I go. It's a little history if you don't know what's going on with Paul here. Paul was a missionary who traveled throughout the Roman Empire planting churches. And somewhere in the 50s, he planted this church at Corinth. And then 4 years later, when this letter was written, Paul's no longer in Corinth. He's away in Ephesus, working in that city. It's a port city on the opposite side of the Aegean Sea, about 200 miles away. And his intent was to travel back to Corinth by going up and around the sea, and then all along the way, he was going to visit these different churches he had planted in Macedonia, and eventually he wanted to land in Corinth and stay there for a longer period. And after Corinth, he wasn't sure where he was going to go, but he knew that wherever it was, whenever it was, he was going to need some help getting there. So he's kind of letting the Corinthians know up front, he's going to need some help, travel is difficult. He was probably going to need some food, some money, some provisions, maybe even some companions to go with him. And we see later that Paul requests the same help for Timothy. He says, help him on his way in peace. Like Paul and Timothy, they're going to need some help with travel expenses. So that's the first facet. Paul's like, I need help from you. Well, facet B, I desire time with you. Verse 7, I do not want to see you now just in passing. I hope to spend some time with you, if the Lord permits. So basically, Paul's like, if I came right now, it'd have to be super brief. I'm hoping for more than just a passing moment. And he's emphasizing his desire to have some quality time with them. And this is important, especially for leaders to be thinking about. Like, Paul's relationship with Corinth, it wasn't focused primarily on what they could do for him. He's not like that insensitive, you know, kind of college student son who calls up his mom out of the blue. Hi, Mom. Yeah, how are things going? Sorry, I missed Mother's Day. But anyways, I'm going to be traveling through town. I was wondering, can I stop by and get some money real quick? It's like, you know, you don't really want to talk to your mom. You just want something from her. Like, that's not what's going on with Paul here. He's not preoccupied with what Corinth can do for him. He actually cares for them. He desires some time with them. Like, this is his spiritual family. And family desires relationship. That they were his children in the faith, and they needed his shepherding. And so ministry consideration facet B that we see here is he's like, I desire time with you. Now, one more, and then I'm going to explain why I'm identifying these three facets. So facet C, he's saying, I have obligations apart from you. Verse 8, I will stay in Ephesus until Pentecost, for a wide door for effective work has opened to me, and there are many adversaries. So the Corinthians might have been thinking, hey, Paul, if time with us is so important to you, why aren't you making it happen? Why are we taking a back seat? Like, we're your family, we're your friends, we're your church that needs your leadership. And Paul's telling them, like, yeah, actually, I really want time with you. But I have these obligations elsewhere that are also worthy of my time. You say, well, what obligations? Well, Paul uses the word opportunity. He said, wide door. He's talking about an opportunity here. A wide door for effective work has opened to me. And then he says there's opposition, like there's many adversaries. So there's both opportunity and opposition. And frequently these come together. Super, super common that the opportunity also comes with opposition. And sometimes in the church we have the idea of, oh, this must not be God. This door must be closing because this is hard. Sometimes it's God closing a door, but very often that's the enemy coming against you. Often opportunity and opposition come together, and we're not supposed to say, well, this is hard, and if it was God, everything would be easy. That's not exactly how it works. We also shouldn't be thinking, well, God's closing this door because if I do this, I won't have time for these other relationships. These relationships are important to me. If I do, like, I've only got so much time. Can you see how this starts to get difficult? Paul, like, planted this church. They're his spiritual kids. And yet he's also working over here. If I do this, I'm saying no to them. But if I do this, I'm saying no over here. And so don't assume that God's closing a door just because it's going to take away from certain relationships. Like, those relationships can matter. And this might actually be God directing you to spend more time elsewhere. And so what this means for us as a body, like, if you're a leader, some of these, like, yeah, I've been there trying to figure out how to balance these and trying to figure out which of these facets I'm supposed to focus on and not wanting to minimize any of them. So we need to be understanding of leaders. So leaders are trying to balance these tensions and really just pray for us that we have wisdom. It can be really hard to know that there's questions as leaders that we're asking ourselves. Like, one question I'm asking myself frequently is, am I valuing my ministry obligations and tasks at the expense of time with people? Like, if ministry ever becomes more important than people, like, I'm missing it. And yet at the same time, I'm also asking myself the question, am I valuing time with people at the expense of ministry obligations? To be honest, part of why we preached this sermon this week, we knew we needed to talk about some of these things before the week of prayer and fasting, is a couple things came up and it just felt like, I think people need to get the priority this week, not preaching. And so this one was kind of ready, waiting in the wings to go. And that was part of what made us decide, let's preach this one this week. Like, I think there's some situations I think I just need to be present. But if I do that all the time, you're gonna get really poor sermons. Like, so that I have ministry obligation to spend time in the Word, but I also need to be with people. And then there's another question that I'm having to ask myself, and it's not just me. Like, this is all ministry leaders. Am I pursuing relationship with people only as a means to get help? Am I being a friend with someone at the church only because we need someone on my music team and my kingdom, my kids' ministry, my church that I'm building? My, exactly. Like, am I truly about people, or am I just acting like I'm about people because I need something from them? I've shared the story before. It's about 10 years back when I was in my car. I was at a different church at this time and felt like the Lord whispered this thought to my heart that kind of thundered in my spirit. It's like, Barry, you act like you care and you want to be perceived as one who cares, but you don't really care. And basically, I knew in that moment, God was like, I'm calling you into ministry and to do more, but if this doesn't change in your heart, that's going to be a no-go for what I'm calling you into. So those are some of the tensions. And actually, if you're a leader, just make sure, like, ask these questions. Like, okay, ministry obligations matter, but you can't do that at the expense of people because people matter. But you can't spend so much time with people that you're not doing the thing you're called to, but you don't want to spend with people only to try to just get their help. Like, but we need their help. And that's part, you do need to spend time with people, and that's part of how it works. So all these things are kind of working together. In my younger days, before I was working for a church, I had a non-church job in another state, and I became pretty close with my employer, and I actually helped build his business, and I eventually became kind of his right-hand guy, and we would drive around together, and we'd brainstorm together, and he really took care of me. Like, I could call him at any time, he'd buy meals for me, he gave me some gifts, he gave me some support, and during that season, looking back, when I was benefiting him, I was one of his closest friends. But eventually, I entered the ministry, and then I was no longer a direct benefit to his business. I just had to say, with that, the relationship just ended. Like, I can't even really have a five-minute conversation with him now. A couple years ago, I tried. I had a quick, simple question that he could have answered right there on the phone. But he said, nah, I'd rather not talk. Bye. And he hung up on me. And I was disappointed, but I actually wasn't super surprised because I'd watched the same thing happen with others while I was there. Like, he'd be their best friend while they were benefiting him, but as soon as they needed to move on or he needed to fire them, it was just immediately over. And that is not the way leadership is supposed to happen in the church. So if you're a leader in the church, let me just speak to you for a moment, or you want to be a leader in the church. Relationships matter. And if relationships don't matter just for the sake of relationships, then people will end up feeling used at some point. And you need to ask yourself, are people just a means to an end? Are people easily dropped when all of a sudden they don't seem to be bringing a benefit to the area that I'm called to? But then also keep in mind, leaders, relationships aren't the only thing that matters. And it's okay to ask people for help. Don't be so thinking, well, I don't want to use people, that you don't ask for help. Like, we're called to equip people for the work of the ministry, which means to invite them into the work of the ministry. And for all of us, just understand these ministry obligations. Don't assume that you're not valued if a leader doesn't seem to have time for you. Like, there's other ministry obligations. Don't assume that you're only valued for the benefit that you can bring. Sometimes leaders are trying to navigate difficult tensions, and you don't always know everything that's going on in their circumstances or what they're trying to work through. So just believe the best. There's actually only one leader who manages all these facets perfectly, and it's Christ. Colossians 1 says that Christ is the head of the body. He's the head of the church. He's the only leader who is always fully present. He promises to us in Matthew 28, I'm with you always. I can't say that to you. Christ is the one who can say, like he does in Hebrews 13:5, I will never leave you. And Christ is the one, he's not only present with you because he's after your help. He invites your help, but he actually doesn't need your help. He says over in Psalm 50, if I were hungry, I wouldn't tell you. Like, he invites us to help him. He invites us into the mission. He invites us to go into all the world, but it's not because he can't get it done without us. So he's not just after you for what he can get after you. He truly cares about relationship. Christ is the only one who never has obligations that necessitate him being gone or him being missing from your life. In Isaiah, Israel was kind of wondering, where is God? And in Isaiah 40:27, God speaks through Isaiah saying, why do you say, Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord? It's like, have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord's the everlasting God. He never slumbers. He never sleeps. He's always there. He's always, always faithful. God never has some other, like earthly leaders will have an obligation that means they can't be with you right now because they have to do that. But God's never like that. We do have one leader who nails this perfectly. And his past sacrifice on our behalf and his present leadership, it covers over the inadequacies of earthly leaders. I'm not trying to make an excuse for what I can't be, but really there's only one person who's doesn't face these same tensions that earthly leaders face. And so ultimately, Christ is the one that we look to for the ultimate leadership. Other leaders only exist to point to him. Earthly leaders aren't enough. But Christ is the head of the church. All right, so that first facet, I'm spending most of the time on the first one. This next one will be quick, and then we'll spend a little bit more time on the third one. So first, ministry decisions are multifaceted. Second, healthy ministry presupposition, ministry partners matter. And because they matter, partners should be put at ease. That's what Paul says in verse 10. When Timothy comes, see that you put him at ease among you, for he's doing the work of the Lord as I am. So Timothy was a ministry partner of Paul's. Paul had described him earlier in the letter as his beloved and faithful child in the Lord. And he had told the Philippian church that Timothy was a ministry partner of proven worth. And in our passage here, Paul says Timothy's doing the work of the Lord just like Paul is. And so for that reason, that the church at Corinth, which wasn't Timothy's home church, Paul says, make sure you put him at ease. Like these, when people come with ministry calling, when people come through our midst, whether it's just for a Sunday or they show up here for a season, like proven ministry partners should be put at ease. Like Paul's saying, don't intimidate him. See that he has nothing to fear. He says, help him on his way. And so being welcoming, being respectful, meeting needs, partners should be put at ease. And partners should not be despised. Verse 11, Paul says, let no one despise him. Paul seems to be concerned that perhaps Timothy might not be well received. We know that the church of Corinth was not exactly the most mature church, and they were really drawn to kind of the spectacular and the showy. And so Paul, for whatever reason, we don't know exactly why, but he seems to be concerned that Timothy might not be received the way he should be. It's possible that maybe Timothy felt more to them like an intern. I want the apostle. Who's this Timothy guy? Paul, we were hoping you'd come. You're sending Timothy? Maybe Timothy wasn't their preferred style. Maybe he was too timid or too strong or too culturally different. Maybe there's a generation gap. Maybe some saw Timothy as being too young. Maybe there were some really strong leaders or strong people at Corinth who didn't feel Timothy was their equal. I actually think that can happen quite a bit in the church, is if we don't feel like a leader is quite up to a certain level, we treat them different, not in a good way. Maybe some resented Timothy coming because, oh, Timothy's gonna come have some influence. I wanted to have that kind of influence and now I have to make room for someone else. I don't know. I don't know why Paul said this. There's a lot of reasons that people might put up walls and look down on someone, but I do know that Paul says don't look down on these ministry partners. Like, let no one despise him. Ministry partners shouldn't be despised. They're not supposed to be treated as annoying intrusions in our life. And so I would ask you, how do you respond? First, just outside leaders. Like if someone comes in, from time to time we have other pastors come. When other pastors visit, when others come through our midst, are you going out of your way to put them at ease? Are you going out of your way to show them respect? Even if they're a little different, or even if they're not really our own, even if, you know, there's a number of reasons why we might kind of why we might put up some walls. What's your attitude? Are you putting them at ease? Are you helping them? I went and preached at a church in Deer Park once, and when I was there, someone anonymously gave me like $400 in an envelope just because I came. I was like, what the heck? It was such good timing. I was like, that's $400. Now, I'm not asking for me. If someone comes through, that was just what, I don't know why, that just popped into my head. That wasn't even in my notes. We should respond well to outside leaders when they come through. And then also, maybe not just outside leaders, but secondary leaders. I don't know. So Timothy wasn't Paul. And it seemed like Paul was concerned that they might treat Timothy different as a result. And so I would just ask you, how do you treat the non-lead pastor leaders here at our church? Do you treat Sandra Lara, our kids director, differently than you treat me? Do you go out of your way to put her at ease and show her respect in the same way that you might towards me? How do you treat our first impressions leader or your connection group leaders? I've actually come to realize in a couple different situations that when it comes to certain people that my opinion of them was that they were like this, I began to realize other people were experiencing someone different than what I was experiencing. Like around me, there was a level of respect and excitement. They showed a certain side of them, but other people were getting someone different. And that shouldn't be. That shouldn't be. And I've noticed sometimes it's, yeah, like we have a number of people doing ministry, a number of people doing leaders, and maybe they're not as mature as your favorite person. Maybe they do things different. Maybe they're earlier on in their journey. We need to be putting people at ease. We need to be in their camp. We need to be giving them room to develop. We need to be recognizing God's working through them also, and be careful that we're not despising the ministry partners that God has put into our midst. It's actually a really big deal that it's not just I'm here because kind of I like Barry. I know some of you are here in spite of me, but that is sometimes the way it is. Like, well, I don't know about these other people, but at least I'll be a fan of the main preaching pastor. And I just say, if that's kind of your attitude, maybe start talking to God. It's like, is this actually a healthy attitude? Like, do I have a love for the whole body? Christ has a love for our whole church, leaders and volunteers both. Do we have that same sort of attitude in our midst? So ministry partners matter. They should be put at ease. They should not be despised. Third and final healthy ministry presupposition. So we've seen that ministry decisions are multifaceted. Ministry partners matter. And lastly, ministry plans are often fluid. Plan B does not necessarily indicate lack of effort. Verse 12, Paul says, "Now concerning our brother Apollos, I strongly urged him to visit you with the other brothers, but it was not at all his will to come now. He will come when he has opportunity." So Apollos was this really gifted speaker who, from all indications, was held in high esteem by this church at Corinth. And most likely, this church at Corinth would have been much happier to hear that Apollos was coming than that Timothy was coming. In fact, it seems like they had been asking about a visit from Apollos, because Paul says, "Now concerning our brother Apollos," seems to indicate that Paul's responding to a question they had, and Paul ends up having this disappointing news. Even though he had thought that it would be a great idea for Apollos to come and visit, and he'd strongly urged him to visit, it hadn't worked out. And so Paul is saying to the Corinthians, like, hey, don't hold this against me. I tried really hard. I gave it my best shot. Like, there was no lack of effort. It wasn't that I didn't care, but plan A didn't work out. So we're on to plan B. And plan B involves a delayed timetable. You know, Apollos is going to come when he has opportunity. And when plan A doesn't work out, it can be disappointing. I don't know, maybe some of you have been there, and you thought this is the way it was going to go, thought this is what was going to happen, and it didn't go that way. And sometimes it can feel like a failure. And sometimes plan B feels like a step backward. However, plan B, our plan B, can turn out to be God's plan A. Notice Paul's language in verse 7. He says, I hope to spend some time with you if the Lord permits. So Paul's plan A was to spend some time with them, but then he adds on, if the Lord permits. Why? Well, he knows that God might have a different plan. You know, we're trying to discern what the Lord's plan is, but our discerners aren't infallible. And sometimes the Lord's not immediately making things clear. Proverbs 16:9 says, we can make our plans, but the Lord determines our steps. And that's actually really good news. In the moment, it might feel very disconcerting when our plan A doesn't happen. But what would you rather happen? The plan you determine or the steps the Lord determines. Like when it's God who intervenes and changes the plan, that's actually not a step backwards. And so we should hold our plan A's loosely. James writes this over in chapter James 4, 13 through 15. He says, now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into this or that city and spend a year there and carry on business and make money. Why, you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. Instead, you ought to say, if it's the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. Now, sometimes plan A fails because of leadership deficiency. So I'm just to be really honest. When that happens, we shouldn't be making excuses. We shouldn't be blaming God. Like, as leaders are actually responsible to do things well. And sometimes when something doesn't go the way we thought, sometimes it's just on the leaders. We can't say, well, I guess it was God's plan that I really messed that up. And even though God can turn our mess ups into something good. But there are many times when our plan A doesn't materialize because God has a different plan. And in those moments, we should recognize ministry is fluid and we should surrender to God's good plan rather than yield to disappointment or finger pointing, because our plan B might turn out to be God's plan A, and that's a good thing. Did you know that Connection Point Church, that was not my plan A? And for a number of people who came here from Indian Trail, I wasn't plan A for a pastor. And actually, in both cases, there was some significant initial disappointment. And there was the potential for some finger pointing. Like, I was at a different church, and I had given it everything I had, and I thought that was my forever church. And then when I had to move on, I felt like a failure. I'm like, what is going on? That was my plan A. It wasn't working out. And I know for Indian Trail, they took some drastic steps to plant a church, and then all of a sudden it stopped, and it kind of felt like a death, and they could have pointed fingers because their plan A wasn't happening. But in both cases, our plan A's, they didn't fail because of lack of effort. They didn't fail because of leadership deficiency. Plan A failed because that was our plan A. It was never God's plan A. Like, God's plan A always happens, but sometimes God's plan A seems like plan B to us. And then even when it does happen, there can be this cost. Like, so Indian Trail helped us plant, and that meant some relationships that were really close had to be separated in order for some people to come help plant Connection Point. So some who were leaving ITC, that they got their plan, the church plant. But for some who were left behind, plan A might not have seemed like that exciting of a plan. Maybe that was plan B or C to them. Like, my plan A wasn't to lose my friend to a church plant. So ministry plans are often fluid. And so we're supposed to plan. We're supposed to think ahead. And we need to seek God in that. But we also need to hold our plans loosely. And the attitude that we should have is, if the Lord permits. If the Lord wills. And I'm sharing this because there are some stirrings that we've been kind of sensing from the church, sensing in leaders. And what we're trying to determine is, like, it seems like maybe the Lord is opening some doors. It seems like maybe there's some opportunities from the Lord. And we'll share more about it I'm going to give you kind of a brief overview of what some of these are right now. But we really want to be praying about this when it comes to the week of prayer and fasting. At first, we were thinking, hey, let's figure all this out. And let's map it out. And let's go to the church. And here's where we're going. And all of a sudden, we're like, wait, no. Let's take some of the stirrings that we think might be from the Spirit to the church. And then let's, as a church, pray about this and decide, is this from the Lord? Are we in this together? Should we go after these things? And if so, in what order? So I'm just going to list, like, a bunch of things have emerged over the past months. We have a real sense for the importance of evangelism and outreach and missions, and some ideas about how to go about that, and also some awareness of our shortfalls. And we would like to pray together as a church for help to see exactly how would the Lord have us to step into that. We've got some things stirring about in the area of men's ministry. We've got an idea for an initial, hey, maybe something that could help kind of get this started. We've got it in our heart to get more men involved in kids ministry. So all four of our elders are serving in kids ministry now, at least for a time. We're trying to figure out, you know, how can I do this and that? But we're trying to work that out. We, from the beginning, when we were planted, I felt like the Lord said, Barry, you're supposed to be a church that's born pregnant, meaning we had the DNA to, just as we were sent out from other churches, that we would be the kind of church that also gives away some of our people and some of our resources to plant churches. And it seems like the Lord is stirring that, like, okay, what's it look like for us to identify who's supposed to be involved in that, and when would that need to happen? So we're praying about this. We would like to become a church that cares well for the abused. A number of situations, a number of prayer times, and a number of things have, like, really caused this to become something that's emerging as a value. We have some ideas for, we'd like to strengthen marriages. We'd like to equip parents. We want to empower people. We're looking like, man, the Lord's bringing a bunch of people, and we've got actually some key leaders with key abilities. How do we say yes to this without saying yes too fast? Like, if you've not been in leadership, if you just tell someone to run but haven't helped them to be aligned and figure out how that fits in, how the communication works and how the structure works, that the thing can cause a bunch of stress. But if you don't figure that out, then the current leaders are like the bottleneck, and no one else gets to come in and use their leadership giftings and leadership abilities. So we have got to make room for more people to launch and figure out how to support this. And then there's two things. So, like, first off, so we're not saying any of those have to happen immediately, and we would have to kind of figure out, where do we start? We can't, like, launch eight initiatives at once. And then we're also thinking, actually, we've already got a lot of people that are really tired. We can't have people like, hey, we're going to start eight new things. Now you got to burn the candle at both ends. So the first thing we're going to talk about in January is rest. What's it look like to rest? And how do we work from a place of rest instead of work from a place of burnout? So we need to talk about that. That's going to be important if we're going to put more things on. And then we've been praying, Lord, would you bring another pastor who has some of the skill sets that we don't? So I wanted to mention this to you now. I'm going to send out an email with more details. We're like, it feels like there's a bunch of exciting opportunities that the Lord is beginning to stir. And actually, as we've started to think through what would need to happen, one of, if not the biggest roadblocks, is logistical. The more things you add, that some of you might not be aware, but the complexity of communication, the complexity of the structure, and as we've gotten bigger, as we've tried to add additional ministries, we just don't have this. There's certain skill sets that we need some help. And so we have been praying, God, would you bring someone to us who's got a pastor heart and a pastor calling, but also has some of this kind of administrative business strengths to help us with some of the structure. And so we're actually working right now with the Harbor Network to put together a job description for this sort of person that we're looking for. We recognize that we need some help in this area. And we really couldn't do, like, how, if we're going to do all these other things, and that's our area of weakness is logistics, but all these things require logistics and structure, and we probably need this person. And so, anyways, I'm sharing all that to give you kind of a heads up. We need your prayers. And we want to pray together as a church. It's not just pray that the leaders make the right decisions. We kind of like to make these decisions together. And that's what the week of prayer and fasting is going to, you know, be about. Like, what is God saying? Are some of these just things that Barry personally is excited about and God means it for me, but not necessarily for the whole church? Or are these things stirrings that God has for the whole church? Those are the sort of questions that we are trying to work through. And it's not just me. Other people have stirrings too, but it's like, is that just a Brolin thing that he needs? Okay, God's calling him to that? Or is that God's putting that on Brolin's heart because he's supposed to lead the whole church into this? Those are the sort of questions we're working through. I'm going to be sending an email out with a link up towards the sort of pastor that we'd like to find. And if you know someone, or you know someone who might be able to help us find this person, or maybe you think you are the person, anyways, we would like help, and we would like feedback on that. So we're going to have this week of prayer and fasting. It's coming up in January. I think it's the 15th through the 20th, 15th through the 21st. We'll be sharing more about this. We do this every year. Every year we have a week of prayer and fasting, and then we come like this, and we share, here's some of the things that seems like maybe the Lord is saying, but let's seek God together so that we see if there's a consensus, and then if these things are from God, where do we start? Which one's first? Who's supposed to be leading it? You know, how does this all work? What's God's timeline? And as we do that, this is why I'm like, ministry plans are fluid. They're multifaceted. They're kind of complex. It's not always black or white. And so let's just be in this together. Let's be seeking God together. Let's understand the complexity. Let's give grace to one another. But let's expect that if the Lord, like God's got a plan. God's got a plan A, and he's going to help us to find it. So shared presuppositions matter. If we don't understand kind of how ministry presuppositions work, we can end up like this, the milkman and the butcher. And the result for them was they had this unnecessary argument. One of them was wrongly feeling pressured because he didn't understand where the other one was coming to, and that ended up leading to this ridiculous accusation that actually wasn't really the case, which led to a defensive reaction. And so it's really helpful for just to understand where we're all coming from and have open and honest dialogue. Because they're divergent presuppositions. It led to some wasted effort. It led to some relational conflict. But once they had the same default presuppositions, like the result was different. They were laughing together. They were in profitable discussions. They worked together. They came to an arrangement. They ended up having a celebration. And so shared presuppositions, they lead to unified effort. It leads to relational progress. So let's all embrace the same healthy ministry presuppositions. There's lots of them, but the three in particular for today. First, ministry decisions are multifaceted. Leaders need help from you. They desire a relationship with you. They have obligations apart from you. Second, ministry partners matter. We should put them at ease and not despise them. And finally, ministry plans are fluid, and plan B might actually be God at work, not a failure in progress. Healthy ministry presuppositions help the church. Oh. Amen.